from WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Walmart is going to the big city. The big box retailer is targeting urban areas like Oakland, Denver, Hartford, Portland, and Chicago. Some cities are more excited than others. In some hard-hit urban communities, Walmart is seen as an economic savior. When Walmart started taking applications for jobs at its new store in Oakland, California, more than 11,000 people lined up. In Chicago, the retailer's plans touched off a contentious debate, dogged by questions of race and class, a debate that continues even after the company has broken ground on its West Side store. Walmart was born and bred in the country, moved on to the suburbs. Now it's looking to sew up America's cities. Is Walmart ready for urban life? And are urbanites ready for Walmart? Up next, On Point, the big box and the big city. We begin with Ta-Nehisi Coates, staff writer for Time Magazine, whose recent article, Walmart's Urban Romance, took a close look at the company's reception as it targeted Chicago. He joins us from Time's offices in New York. Ta-Nehisi, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So give us a sense of, let's start with Chicago. What happened when Walmart said, we want to come into the West Side, a pretty tough side of Chicago? What was the range of response?
Well, they actually wanted to come into two areas. It was the West Side and the South Side. And from my reporting and from what I gathered, this isn't their first attempt, but this was the one in which they got the furthest. And I think the reception was mixed. There were people there who, I mean, as anybody who lives in a big city will tell you, and certainly in the poorer areas, there's certainly a demand for retail and for grocery stores that is, you know, not being met by developers.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a demand for jobs. And so I think it was a split. I think there were people on one side who were, you know, very happy about, you know, getting everyday low prices coming to their area and jobs coming to their area. And then there were people who had, you know, very valid concerns about Walmart, their labor practices, and other environmental issues, a whole range of issues that have been raised about Walmart and what it pretends for a community. And I think basically those two things, you know, one on the ideological side, one on the very practical side, came into conflict there.
You write that there was kind of lines drawn along within the black community, which is large and powerful in the West Side of Chicago, and then also along racial lines between white and black around union issues. Can you describe those for us?
Yeah, although, you know, even though race was a component, I must really emphasize this was a really, really complex issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would not hesitate to say that there were as many black people opposed to Walmart as there were for. So it wasn't a strict black-white breakdown. I'm not even sure it was a strict, you know, poor middle-class breakdown. I think a great example of that is, you know, in their attempt to put a store in Chatham, which is the South Side site that they wanted.
Right.
Chatham is a very, very, very black neighborhood, you know,
mm-hmm.
on the South Side of Chicago. And, you know, the forces there that did not want a Walmart prevail. Now, I should say they only prevailed by one vote on the council, but they did, in fact, prevail. On the West Side, it's an area where, you know, there just isn't as much retail. I think this comes down to very, very practical considerations. It's just less retail. It's just less jobs. The West Side is where folks rioted in 68 when King was killed. And, you know, the area just never really recovered. You know,
but race came in, as you write, Ta-Nehisi, because Chicago's unions have historically been more white-dominated. And, of course, unions have been very touchy about Walmart.
Well, yeah, there is that issue. I mean, definitely the building trade unions, I will say, you know, certainly have a history, and certainly there's a viewpoint in black communities in big cities everywhere. This isn't just in Chicago that the building trades have discriminated against black people, if not directly, I would say by means of nepotism and handing out jobs to their kids and to, you know, friends,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, this goes to, I think this is, you know, just an issue in general for blue-collar work and unionized work. It's the same thing in New York, where I think here where we are, there was a report that, you know, despite, you know, New York being this really racially diverse city, the fire department, for instance, only, you know, the minorities were like 3%. It was 97%
right.
white or something like that.
So it's not just Chicago.
In Chicago, mm-hmm. where, you know, the building trade unions have been traditionally dominated by whites. And so I think that impacted, even though it wasn't the building trades who were organizing against Walmart, it impacted the ability of unions to, you know, organize black folks who just had no love for unions at all.
Jesse Jackson, of course, a big figure in Chicago and nationally, said, yes, we need supermarkets. You'd rather have them than not, as you quote him. But he said, but the point is that employment and development must go hand in hand. We need work where you can have a livable wage and health insurance and retirement. How has Walmart reached out to the African-American community in Chicago as they worked on this?
Well, they, first of all, I mean, one of the, I guess, more intelligent, you know, someone else might say opportunistic things that they did is they sent in black people who'd worked in stores who they'd given contracts to advertising to do work within the community to sort of lay the groundwork. They hired a black woman to build the store, which given the racial politics of Chicago and the building trades, I just don't know how often that happens when you have a project that big and you got a black woman, you know, who's in charge of that. It's very hard to combat that. That presents, I think, a public relations image that it's just an absolute nightmare for anybody that's anti-Walmart, even though they may have very, very valid claims. You know, I think the issue is, you know, the argument against Walmart, if you're on the west side of Chicago,
yes,
is much more complex than the argument for Walmart. It comes down to, you know, a couple of basic things. I don't have retail, and I don't have jobs. That's a very, you know, sort of simple, you know, valid argument. Mm. And the argument, I think, against is much more complex and much more long range.
And Walmart brings a huge volume of retail and no small number of jobs, even if they may not be the highest paying in the country.
I think that's a very valid concern. These are certainly not great jobs. They're definitely problems in terms of health insurance, the impact on the environment, the impact on retail in Chicago, period. Not so much retail on the west side of Chicago, because there just isn't much retail there, but retail in Chicago, period. But you are dealing with a community, you know, you can say, you know, to these folks, you know, these jobs aren't the greatest job. You're dealing with a community without jobs, period.
And they want them. Where does the building stand there now? Has the construction begun?
Construction has begun. Yeah, they knocked down the building, and they, you know, when I was there, which was like maybe a month or two ago, they were, you know, just beginning construction on the building.
So Walmart on its way into the west side of Chicago, and that won't be the last urban area, as we understand. Ta-Nehisi Coates with Time Magazine, we're grateful to you for being with us. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you for having me.
We're talking this hour about Walmart's move to the city. What do you think? What impact has Walmart had in your community? Are you hungry for everyday low prices on your urban block, or worried about low wages and local business? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Denver, Colorado, is John Dicker, author of the new book, The United States of Walmart. John, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Also with us from Bentonville, Arkansas, is Dan Fogelman, corporate spokesman for Walmart. Mr. Fogelman, thanks for joining us.
Tom, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's a cheery, everyday low prices voice we hear there. What's the strategy? What's Walmart doing with cities in America, Dan Fogelman?
Well, it's true that we've expanded into urban areas over the last few years. That's more of a natural progression, really, of our growing company than it is any kind of specific strategy. We began as a company that was designed to serve the underserved in rural America, where Sam Walton felt there was a big need for basic goods and merchandise that wasn't being provided. We have some stores in urban markets, including the Chicago area, Los Angeles, New Orleans, and most recently, as you mentioned at the top of the hour, our Oakland store. We would like to go where there are customers who are underserved, who need the everyday low prices. Some of the studies that we've seen show that we save the average consumer $500 to $1,200 a year just by having Walmart available in their neighborhood.
It seems like for about 5 minutes this week, Walmart was headed for downtown Boston. The Greater Boston Labor Council came out right away saying it will do everything in its power to stop Walmart from moving into downtown crossing. That's the Boston experience. Why the pushback from unions, Dan Fogelman?
Well, the unions have tried for years unsuccessfully to organize our associates. They see us a threat to the status quo. When we come in, we provide lower prices. It's someplace people want to work. It's someplace people want to shop.
John Dicker, a boon to urban communities or something else?
Well, yeah, the way Dan was talking, you'd think they're running a charity organization. The reason Walmart is moving into the urban areas is because they kind of have to. If you look at where the retail dollars are spent in this country, they're in the top 70 MSAs. Market statistical areas.
But the west side of Chicago, that you can get into the metro area of Chicago without going, that's a tough part of town.
Right, but Walmart has to go into these urban areas because that is where, if they want you know, more national market share, that's where they have to go. And, you know, I'm not disputing their right to do that, but that, you know, they're doing that because that's where the dollars are being spent.
And how are people assessing whether it's a net good or something else?
Well, I think the Time magazine reporter got it right. It's kind of a 50-50 split, and the argument for Walmart is a bit simple and simpler than the argument against it, which is like he said, more long term. One of the things that's assisting Walmart in this is not only their distribution and data infrastructure network, which is second to none, and they can operate on lower, you know, profit margins. But the fact that the big larger context here is that the chain grocery stores, the major chains, kind of abandoned the urban core in the 60s, kind of with the white flight. And so those communities are underserved by traditional grocery stores. So, of course, there's a lot of people there who would welcome a Walmart into the urban core.
I mean, you were joking about Dan Fogelman's characterization, but when you look at what retail has been in many urban centers, it does have a little Mission of Mercy look to it here.
No, that's true. And that's why this is such a complex debate, especially, you know, in the west side of Chicago. I believe what Walmart replaced, and Dan Craig can correct me if I'm wrong, but was an abandoned candy factory.
Yes.
And, you know, if you're not living in that community, which I think had an unemployment rate, something staggering like 40%, if you're not living in that community and you're going to say, hey, we think that abandoned factory is better than a Walmart supercenter, you know, that I wouldn't want to get into that type of debate. I wouldn't want to get into that type of political argument, especially if I didn't live there.
It's a tough argument, but we are going to hear voices from Chicago on both sides of the issue there in this hour. John Dicker, author of the new book, The United States of Walmart, joining us from Denver. Please stick with us. And Dan Fogelman with Walmart in Bentonville, Arkansas, world headquarters. Please stick with us. We're talking this hour about Walmart going to the big city, Walmart going urban. You can join us. What's your attitude on a Walmart in the neighborhood? Are you for it or against it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Walmart going to the big city, Walmart going urban, opening new inner-city locations on a number of locations around the country, and more to come. You can join the conversation. What do you think? What's been the Walmart impact on small-town, ex-urban America? What will it be downtown? And what should cities make of the Walmart trade-off? Low prices, but maybe low wages. And there's this: if the rest of retail has fled many cities, why not bring in Walmart? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined by John Dicker, author of the new book, The United States of Walmart. We're also joined by Dan Fogelman, a spokesman for Walmart, joining us this hour from Bentonville, Arkansas, Walmart headquarters. And right now, from Chicago, where there have been heated recent debates on both sides of the issue, we are joined first by Reverend Joseph Kiles. He's leader of the 37th Ward Pastors Alliance, a community group there, pastor of the Heirs of the Promised Church. He supports Walmart's construction of a new store there on the west side. Reverend Kiles, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation, Tom.
We are also joined from Chicago by Elsie Redmond. He's an organizer for the South Austin Coalition, a community group there on the west side. He has opposed Walmart's entry there. Elsie Redmond, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Reverend Kiles, first to you, if I may. When you look out at your flock and advise them how to think about Walmart, or when you're talking to the rest of the city, what's your view been?
Walmart, the issue for us was a little bit bigger than just the jobs available for the store, but mm-hmm. we also wanted to really put some demands on Walmart in reference to the construction portion. And I think we've accomplished that. In case you didn't know, I heard the gentleman from New York speaking in reference to this being the contractor being an African-American female.
Yes.
Well, we're the ones that fought for that. And that is the first time in Walmart's history that their store has been not only the demolition portion, but the construction portion has been led by an African-American female.
So it's not just retail and it's not just jobs in the store, but it's the construction itself. When you put it all together, it's a full net plus to you, Reverend Kiles?
It's a full net plus package, yes. When it's all examined together, the fact that we do need the jobs, and some critics have said, you know, Walmart is a low-paying position, but there are a lot of people in this community who need a low pay rather than no pay. And at least if they have a fish, We can teach them what to do with it. But if we have to keep providing them with a fish, we're not really helping them.
And the Walmart fish will do if that's what's there. Elsie Redman, we've heard all this hour that it's easier to argue for Walmart very often than to argue against. But you have argued against. What's the case you make?
The case we've made actually is we knew that Walmart was going to come in. Knowing the political wave here in Chicago, we knew they were going to be here in Chicago. And of course, you know, retail is very important. But one of the things we wanted Walmart to do was to sign a community benefit agreement. And that community benefit agreement would outline a living wage for its employees, benefits for its employees. One of the things, health care has become the biggest issue in all this country. And Walmart, historically, hasn't really paid health benefits for their workers. So we wanted that. And also, we wanted the workers the right to unionize. The spokesperson from Walmart seems to come out with this analysis that, you know, Walmart is like Jed Clampett and sort of come into the community to save the neighborhood. But, you know, they're a multinational corporation that sort of drives the wages around the world. And we want to make sure that they're here in Chicago, that they're going to pay people a living wage.
But
now, I understand the Reverend's analysis that, well, you know what, any job is better than no job.
Yes.
But unfortunately, you know, on the west side of Chicago, the area is gentrifying itself. So rents are going up. Wages are going down, utilities are going up, and wages are going down. And it's important that, you know, people are given living wages rather than the subsidiary wages where you can't take care of your family.
Elsie Redman, let me ask you, Reverend Kyles was saying that he also pushed for Walmart to make some promises, and they did, and they followed through in hiring a black contractor to demolish the factory, build the new Walmart store there. Was there more on your list that they wouldn't respond to? What was Walmart's response to you and your group?
Actually, you know, it was not to deal with our group whatsoever. I mean, they preferred to deal with the Pastoral Alliance and the aldermen. And, of course, it was good that, you know, some construction jobs have been given, but I think that there needs a lot more to be done in terms of the wages for the workers in the community itself.
And
unless those wages are living wages, how can a person support their family? How can those persons pay their rent? How those persons can afford adequate health care?
Reverend Kyles, what do you say to that?
I wanted to jump in there for a moment because part of many people across the country are talking about the wages in the store, but there's more to this package than just the wages in the store. First of all, it's been my ideal. When I go into Walmart, I think Walmart, and here's to their credit, here's one thing Walmart got right. Walmart picked the two categories of people that nobody else wanted, which
was
seniors and kids.
To do what?
To be their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Walmart stores, a couple years ago, if you were to walk in, were full of seniors and kids. Nobody else wanted to hire them, so they didn't have to pay a large wage. Now, all of a sudden, because America is shifting away from manufacturing, people are being forced to go to work, and Walmart had a household. Now, if they have to work head of household to work at Walmart, then, yes, Walmart's going to be forced to pay a higher wage. But, again, you got to see it from their end as well. And, again, I'm not advocating for Walmart. I'm also asking, well, then why are they putting so much focus on the jobs in the store, but they don't want to put any focus on the jobs building the store? These guys make $30, $40, $50 an hour. Now, if you're going to talk about making some money, you want to talk about a living wage.
Of course, that's a one-time project.
The opportunities
right.
for these people in this neighborhood to get into those positions.
But, of course, that's a one-time opportunity. Building the store, and then you've
Here's what we did. We went in and said, hey, listen, this is capacity building. We want you to hire the small businesses and the guys who are right here in the community to build your store, because if they can build your store, then they can build the Menards, they can build the Targets, they can build the Cub Foods.
So you build that muscle and use it some more.
Building the capacity
yeah.
of these people to hire other people from the neighborhood so they can move from working for Walmart to working for one of these companies.
Elsie Redman, Reverend Kyles is saying, look, don't just look at Walmart. It's the whole economy. It's not Walmart's fault if heads of households are now having to turn there as primary breadwinners. Let it be the young and the old.
You know what? I've heard that argument so many times, and I think that's like a total excuse. Okay, so let's hire the seniors and the kids at Walmart, and that's going to help build the infrastructure of the community itself. And I would think that the Reverend would be a lot smarter to understand how the economy really works, and it takes everyone to be working to really increase the economy and the infrastructure of the community itself. And, you know, that was one of the things, is that the argument was, well, you know, these kind of jobs would go to young people in the community or seniors in the community, and I think that's just a cop-out itself.
Everyone
in the community should have an opportunity to get those jobs. Everyone in the community should have an opportunity to make sure that those jobs are living wage jobs for them and their families. As I said before,
I
the rents are going up, the utilities are going up, yet the wages are increasingly becoming lower.
I understand. I want to raise something here, if I may.
I got to raise that issue.
Reverend Kyles, is that you?
No, but I did want to raise an issue here, because if this place is such a terrible place to work and they pay such low wages, I cannot understand. It just baffles me how they could be the world's largest employer.
Of course, they're the world's largest employer because they drive wages down not only in the United States, but
across the world. And there's the debate in Chicago. There's something else I've got to raise here.
When people sort of like have this great support for this multinational corporation itself. Now,
gentlemen, Reverend Kyles, Elsie Redmond, we hear the passion on both sides here and respect it. But something else I have to ask about, and I don't want to make bad blood here, but I want to acknowledge the reality on the ground in Chicago. Elsie Redmond, you have said, and I hope it's present company excluded here, that the black community activists were bought off in Chicago. You're quoted as saying, "I was ashamed to be black. A lot of people have no principles. They wear the dashiki but always take the green money from a multinational corporation." What are you referring to there?
Well, I was in the Chicago City Council for one of the hearings on Walmart, and all the proponents were just talking, and it's totally anti-union sentiment, incredible amount of anti-union sentiment. And there was no real history of African Americans within the union movement itself. Yes, there are serious problems, particularly with the building trades, but there's been a great history of African Americans in the union movement. My grandfather was in the Sleeping Porters Union. My father was a Teamster. He had serious problems inside the Teamsters, but, you know, unionization helped us to buy a home. Unionization helped me to go to college.
But the bought off, what do you mean by bought off, Elsie Redmond?
Well, one of the things is, when Walmart came in, they really framed the issue very well. They had blacks in suits go to the local elected officials and the ministers and pretty much sort of offered them, you know, people wanted community centers. So, like, okay, we'll make sure that, you know, so-and-so's church gets a community center if you support us on this drive.
Can I jump in right there and stop
Reverend Kyles?
Stop this misnomer before it becomes something that people pay attention to. Walmart, first of all, sent in, the gentleman that came in was John Bezio, who was a white man, to come in and talk about Walmart. I believe he was a regional director at the time. He went and talked to the alderman about bringing this story in. At the time that was happening, simultaneously, the African-American pastors on the West Side
mm-hmm.
had decided that there had been enough of this retailers and other businesses coming in. They're building a store. The people who are building the store are not reflected of the community.
And you got that taken care of. We understand
that. Well, they came in, they do this, they bring in people, and they hire from outside of the community.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to address all of these situations. Now, as far as a community center, we talked about a community center for the entire community, nobody's church. As a matter of fact, there are combined over 112 churches currently in negotiation for this community center that he's talking about.
I want to understand, is Walmart financing a community center in addition to the store?
No, they are not. No, they are not. So let's dispel that lie. They are not.
Okay. Reverend Kyles, Elsie Redmond, you both bring this so vividly to life, and we're grateful to have you. I wish you'd stick with us. We've got a couple other guests here from Walmart and a gentleman who's looked at Walmart. I hope we can bring them in for just a moment here. First, to John Dicker, listening in from Denver. John, I wish you could speak to Walmart's effort across the country to reach out to minority communities, urban and non-urban, but urban in particular, as this push into the cities has grown. Describe that to us. What's the shape of it been?
Well, I can put a little bit of a context in it. They've been donating fairly heavily. Walmart's, you know, philanthropy is usually to spread money far and wide rather than give a lot of money to one organization, they'll write a $500 check to the Little League, an $800 check to the school district, and they'll just try to spread the love far and wide. But one of the things that's interesting is they've donated significantly in the last, I think, 3 or 4 years to the United Negro College Fund, the NAACP, which, politically doesn't really align with Walmart's Political Action Committee, mm-hmm. which supports Republicans to Democrats by about 75% to 25%. So that's interesting. That shows, why are they doing this and why are they doing this now?
And in government centers in Washington, D.C., in terms of supporting politicians, what do you know?
Well, they've got into politics after they got – they didn't really get what they wanted out of a banking bill that occurred in the mid-90s. And they realized that, Sam Walton's idea was just take care of your customers and everything else will fall into place. And David Glass, the second CEO of Walmart, he kind of had the same idea. But they've realized, that if they want to play the game, they got to get, they got to spread the money around. Trent Lott advised them, start writing some checks.
And the black and Hispanic communities, what about the outreach there politically?
Politically, I couldn't comment too much more, except that I know they've been donating to the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional Hispanic Caucus mm-hmm. have received money from Walmart.
Dan Fogelman with Walmart in Bentonville, Arkansas. You've been listening patiently there. Join us here on what you heard from Elsie Redman and Reverend Kyles in Chicago, two fairly different attitudes toward your approach there. Of course, you were rebuffed on the south side of Chicago. You're in on the west side. Elsie Redman says, the big picture is, yes, we want retail, and yes, we need jobs, but we need better-paying jobs than these. What do you say to that?
Well, I say that we offer good-paying jobs. The average wage for a full-time hourly associate in Chicagoland is well over $10 an hour. And for many of these folks, the job is the right job for the right time in their life. As one of the gentlemen mentioned, we do employ a lot of students. We employ a lot of senior citizens. We employ a lot of second income providers. We also have great career opportunities. In fact, 76% of our store management team started out as hourly associates at Walmart. So for the person that maybe is in a poverty-stricken area and is needing a job, this is the door of opportunity that's opening to them to a career that could lead them into management. There was also mention of philanthropy, and we try to be a tremendous neighbor in every community, and as Mr. Dicker pointed out, we do a lot with the local stores. In fact, 90% of the decisions about where we donate is made right there at the local store, because they know what's going to have the biggest impact in their community. Last year, we gave away over $170 million to communities, civic causes across the country, and right now, we're busy in New Orleans and along the Gulf Coast helping out folks. We've announced this week $1 million in cash contributions to the Salvation Army that'll help provide 400,000 meals per day, $1 million to the American Red Cross.
Sounds positively saintly. Elsie Redman, it sounds like a dream job, door of opportunity, and a generous hand to those in need. What could be better?
Well, one of the things is, just going back to my same point, is the issue of living wage jobs. Health benefits, I think, are very, very important. And I would like the gentleman from Bentonville to sort of talk about their health benefits that they provide to their employees. Health care is one of the biggest issues right now all across the country, and we all know about the health disparities between with people of color.
Dan Fogelman, we just have a minute before the break, but we have read of Walmart employees being on the public dole when it comes to health coverage.
Walmart is actually taking people off of public assistance. A survey done in December by the segmentation company, based on the results of that, we estimate 160,000 people have come off the ranks of America's uninsured just by coming to work for Walmart.
How many Walmart employees also have to receive public assistance in order to flesh out their income and their health coverage?
This survey revealed, in respect to healthcare specifically, that before they came to work for Walmart 3 months prior, 7% of our associates were on Medicaid. Once they join, that number drops to 5%. After 2 years of employment, that number drops to 3%. Not a lot of people know it, but yes, we do offer health insurance, and in fact, it's available to both full and part-time associates, and costs less than $40 a month for single coverage. You can get it for less than $155 a month for family coverage.
Elsie Redman, you're looking a gift horse in the mouth here?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, it's easy for the gentleman in Bentonville to sort of skew the record itself. So, from what we talk to people who do work at Walmart, they're not getting that, and they have to be put on some sort of level of public assistance. Mm. So why is this multinational corporation putting people on public assistance?
We've got to take a short break here. Elsie Redman and Reverend Joseph Kyles in Chicago, please stay with us. We want to hear more from both of you. Dan Fogelman with Walmart. John Dicker, author of The United States of Walmart. Please stick with us as well. Listeners, you can join us. If poor, white, rural America and a lot of its middle class shop at Walmart, why not urban America? Will the whole country now be hooked on low prices, low wages, and the Walmart way? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll get to your calls right after this break.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, BICON.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital, for more than 60 years helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services in Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. On the eve of Labor Day weekend, we are looking this hour at Walmart, going to the big city Walmart, going urban. Is it in your city yet? We're at 1-800-423-8255. We have some terrific guests this hour from Chicago, Reverend Joseph Kyles, leader of the 37th Ward Pastors Alliance, a community group. He has supported Walmart's construction of a new store on the west side of Chicago there. Also from Chicago, Elsie Redman, organizer for the South Austin Coalition, a community group in that neighborhood. He has opposed it, but it is underway. From Bentonville, Arkansas, we have a spokesman for Walmart, Dan Fogelman, and from Denver, Colorado, John Dicker, author of the new book, The United States of Walmart. And we have a Walmart parking lot full of callers who want to join us. I want to begin turning to them. Daryl is calling from Brockton, Massachusetts. Daryl, what do you think?
I am in the manufacturing industry and have been for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Walmart began to come up towards the East Coast, it was like, whoa, what's going on here? And starting to see all the shops around me close, which was really, really scary. But you know something? If Walmart is going to come into the urban community, which has been forgotten about,
mm-hmm.
I grew up in the urban community, and I've had the opportunity to live in suburbia America, and what a contrast.
What a contrast on the retail front in terms of what you can buy and where you can shop. Is that what you mean, Daryl?
Exactly. And what's available, the products that are available, even the amount of service that in the way that you're treated is so different because of that. And if Walmart's going to go into the urban community and provide people who don't have jobs at all, I don't care if it is minimum wage. At least it's something. It's a beginning. And that problem is evident in what's happened in New Orleans. Look at that community down there. It's impoverished because they've been forgotten about.
Would they be significantly better off if they were working at Walmart, or would they still be on poverty's edge?
Well, you know something? Just like one of the callers said earlier, commented, mm-hmm. is that you can keep providing these people with fish, or you can teach them how to fish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you keep providing them with the fish, you're not really helping them.
Daryl, we've got it, and we thank you for your call. John Dicker, how about it here? It is clearly the case that an awful lot of urban Americans have had retail options that were lousy compared to what were in the suburbs. So, you know, this is going to seem like a fountain of goodies.
Tom, can I throw out a statistic for you?
Is that Elsie?
No, this is Pastor Kyle.
Oh, Pastor Kyle, please.
We did some research before Walmart came in about how much money people from the west side of Chicago were spending in the closest suburban Walmart stores,
mm-hmm.
and the number was just astronomical. It was over $80 million.
They had to drive out of their neighborhood
to
the burbs.
They had to take public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Our seniors had to, you know, wait for public transportation to send vehicles. And, I mean, the number was unbelievable. And all of this money being spent from the west side now,
mm-hmm.
we're talking about just the people in the 60651 zip code.
Mm-hmm.
$80 million of that money was going out and not benefiting this community. And while people were saying, don't build a store, we're like, listen, they're already spending the money. So why not at least let some of that money benefit the people who are spending it?
John,
well, my question would be that $80 million.
Well, thanks for interrupting me, guys.
Hang on, John.
I'm sorry, Reverend. But that $80 million is going to Walmart. How's that going to the community itself, Reverend?
And that lays it out very plainly right there. I want to turn to Denver and get John Dicker's view on this. John, what do you say?
Well, I think the point made is quite right. I think Mayor Daley had made it in the debate on Chicago. What Walmart does is it's kind of one retail strategist called it like a Maoist strategy. You surround the countryside. You surround the exurban core.
You surround the cities.
Suburbs,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And then you can make that kind of depressing and hard to argue with point, which is, hey, they're spending the money at Walmart anyway.
But it wasn't Walmart that abandoned urban areas. I mean, retail has left so many American cities high and dry, so that's not Walmart's
fault. Yeah, it's called the grocery gap. Yeah, and if you look at it, it's been pretty well documented in places, especially in places like L.A. or Chicago and Detroit. It's another one where, the kind of fresh vegetables, even the way the stores are marketed and merchandised in the urban core, you see more junk food up front. The quality of the produce is not as good. Sometimes in Hartford, there was a study done where it showed that the same chain in the urban core versus the suburbs, same store, the prices were way higher in the urban core.
What do you expect from Walmart on that front?
I don't expect
to. Building a grocery store in Chicago, just in case you guys didn't know.
So it's not groceries.
It's not a superstore.
Right? Right. What about, John, from the pattern you've seen? Do you expect equivalent to suburban prices here? What about the array of goods that will be offered here?
You know, one of the things, a lot of the new Walmart stores that are not super centers, most of them are designed so that you can push out a wall and it becomes a super center. I forget it's a pretty high percentage. You know, every year Walmart opens lately about 200, 250 super centers. And I think more than half of them are regular Walmart stores that a wall gets pushed in and poof, it's a super center.
So it could come later. I want to continue getting to our callers. So many have been waiting. Sylvia's calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Sylvia. You're on the air.
Okay. I've been enjoying the amount of heat being generated by this discussion. I think that, Walmart pushing the small businesses out of business, out of existence, it's been a tradition for upward mobility for immigrants and poor people to start a small business, and they learn self-reliance, they mm-hmm. learn things, the tasks, and I believe, part-time jobs at Walmart do not teach fishing. We're using the fishing analogy. And I also believe, I've seen this with people I know, that the reality of Walmart, they talk about full-time jobs and benefits, but a lot of these people are hired for 15 hours a week or less, and no benefits go with it.
Part-time. Sylvia, but let me ask you, I understand your analysis there. You don't see this as fishing, and I get that. I understand how that could be argued. But put yourself in the shoes. You're in a nice community, but if you're in a community that didn't have decent retail at all, can't you imagine being happy to see it come to town?
Oh, certainly I can, but I think that maybe we should have some government policy which issues mini or micro credits like we do in the third world for people to bootstrap themselves.
We hear it. Reverend Kyles, Sylvia says, look, yes, it's going to be jobs, but it's actually going to be a roadblock to the American tradition of starting small businesses. What small businessman in west side of Chicago will be able to compete with Walmart on anything that it sells?
After surveying the west side, if you notice, the one on the west side got approved and the one on the south side didn't.
Right.
Because generally the small businesses on the south side were African-American-owned businesses. That was not the case on the west side. And not only that, I don't think we need to make it Walmart's responsibility to teach people how to be in business. I think we need to look at the realities of Walmart as a place where people can begin to learn a work ethic. I believe Maslow does said it best when he said, listen, it's not just about the money. Some of these people don't know how to get up and go to work on a regular basis. Some of them just need that kind of training, that kind of reinforcement. Now, if Walmart is hiring somebody for 15 hours a week, you look at it and say, that's horrible, that's horrific. But I say, here's a guy who's been standing around with his hands in his pocket all day, every day, and if he can get 15 hours to just go someplace and be around positive people, it's going to make a difference in this community. It's going to make a difference on people.
Elsie Redmond, Walmart is a kind of a university for life.
Absolutely not, and I totally disagree with the reverence analysis, debt analysis itself. All right, and that's the argument that a lot of people have used, that, the whole argument, any job is better than no job, and eventually that will build the neighborhood. That's a totally ridiculous analysis to have.
I didn't
itself,
say any job.
Really understanding the economy. Of course, a lot of the small businesses are like Arabic or Asian-owned, on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
So people are like, well, the heck with those businesses. let's move in this multinational corporation.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be all love and smiles to us all.
And
Tom, if I could jump in here.
Is this Dan Fogelman?
Yeah, this is Dan.
Voice of Walmart. Yes, please.
A couple of things to correct. First of all, a lot of people don't realize it, but a majority of jobs at Walmart are full-time. And both full and part-timers.
The majority? What percentage, Dan? Is it?
I don't have the exact percentage.
Is it 51% or 99%?
No, it's significantly over 50%. When you look at other retailers, the industry trend is more like 20 to 40%, but we're well over 50%. It's also important to note the caller mentioned something about fishing. Our company really is the American dream. Sam Walton started out learning about retail by working at JCPenney.
You mean it worked for Sam Walton, but does it work for the people who work for the heirs of Walton, the richest Americans there are practically?
Well, I mean, certainly their die is cast based off of, they were born into the business, they've learned the business and have been, part of it at various stages of their lives. But it's true for the average worker. I mean, we open the door of opportunity to people. Again, 76% of our store management team starts out as hourly associates.
But Dan, I've got to ask you about that. Wait, I want you to address this just at the economic level because it is interesting. I mean, and it's not just urban centers that have dealt with this. Main Streets have taken a hit when Walmart comes to town. You can say that's the market working. People do get the low prices, we get it. But can you not see that Walmart might be an impediment to people starting up small businesses that traditionally wouldn't have faced this behemoth, right, this giant right in their path? Is Walmart, yes, it gives jobs, training, and an upward management path to some, but is it also a kind of roadblock to organic local business development?
Well, two things on that. First of all, customers ultimately decide what businesses are going to be successful. We're successful because we give good customer service and great prices. Secondly, if you walk outside of most any Walmart store in North America and look around, you're going to see new businesses cropping up. Other entrepreneurs want to take advantage of the customer flow that we create. And in community after community after community across America, you can see that repeat itself out. And so as we're talking about urban centers, we talk about a Walmart going in where there's nothing else. And I think you're going to find over time that's going to be the catalyst for growth in the community. If you look at Baldwin Hills, California, we put a Walmart store in there, and things are getting better. Things are turning around there. And I don't expect any different in Chicago.
And yet we can see that, and you hear the counterargument at the same time. Let's hear from our callers. Julia is calling from Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Julia. You're on the air.
Hi. This is a great discussion. I guess my two cents is, well, 2 points.
Okay.
I live in Vermont, where Walmart has really been an issue for, rural communities.
Fierce fights there about it, yeah.
And a real dilemma, because mm-hmm. people don't have, accessible places to mm-hmm. for buying cheap goods. So the need is definitely there. And I moved here from Brooklyn, where that was also the case for a lot of poor communities.
Right. So what do you think?
Well, I think it's a false dichotomy to say Walmart, yes or no. I think communities really need to be pushing Walmart to be better, and I completely agree with Mr. Redmond, that as communities who care about our shared economy, we need to be pushing for livable wages. We need to be pushing for our healthcare coverage, and not just from businesses, but ultimately, universal systems.
What do you mean by pushing for? Do you mean unionizing? What are your options there?
We should be supporting union efforts. We should be supporting stronger protections for unionizing. I mean, Walmart is a notorious union buster, and, our laws and our current administration just look the other way. But we also should be supporting raising minimum wages to make it the livable wage
yep.
across the board. Walmart isn't the only villain here, although it's certainly huge.
So, but to tilt the whole package a little more toward the worker, you're saying, and I want to put that to Elsie Redmond in Chicago and Julia in Burlington, Vermont. Thanks for calling. Mr. Redmond, have you found that the Chicago community has had the capacity to surround Walmart with enough of these kind of encouragements and constraints that Julia is talking about to get what you want, what you need?
Oh, yes. I think that even with those who are proponents, want to make sure that Walmart provides workers with living wages and benefits.
But is it working, I'm asking? Do you have the strength locally?
Have we got the table with Walmart? No. Can we get to the table with Walmart? Yes.
Tom, let me say this, too. One of the reasons I think that Walmart was successful in getting in Chicago is part of the strategy from the union is
you know, hey, we're the union, and you guys should love us. And, well, if we're going to attack a company like Walmart and say, listen, you need to pay a living wage, then we're going to have to attack some of these companies that are paying living wages and say, hey, you're going to have to start letting people from the urban communities into your organization. I think that's why it failed here in Chicago on the west side, because there is, you know, the unions have consistently shown that they do not want African Americans as part of the union. So,
well, I would disagree with that.
Well, look at the percentages. I mean, there's no disagreement with the numbers.
I think that you're talking mainly about
the numbers.
Union. There are a majority of African Americans who are with the Service Employees International Union. There are a majority of African Americans in the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
And none of those.
But you've got a Chicago history there, and we can hear it playing out right now. I want to get one more caller. John is calling from Boston. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yes, I just thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
And, this statement is directed to the panelists that support Walmart. Listen, just yesterday we had slaves that had jobs. Were they better off?
Slavery is not a job, and I wouldn't say something like that.
You've got an African-American fellow citizen saying slavery is not a job, sir.
Well, I'm just saying that, if you may allow me.
I'm just
saying that Walmart is there. Yes, they provide jobs. But I do know somebody that works for Walmart. And he doesn't have a health coverage. He just had a recent tooth problem. He had to run around to community centers to have the tooth root canal taken care of.
Can I make a point on the health care issue?
Yes, you can. And, John, we've got your point. We appreciate you making it. Our time is short. John Dicker, you've been our most patient panelist here. Please.
Yeah, the most interrupted, too. Thank you. Yes, the point that one of the things that Walmart will say is they give benefits to their part-time associates. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They give you benefits after 2 years. I don't know what percentage of Walmart, like all of retail, has a high turnover rate. I don't know what the percentage is of people who stick around at a part-time job for 2 years at Walmart waiting for health care. I'm going to guess it's not a lot. The other larger point here is in state after state, that tallies the data on who, you know, who's employed, who's using the public health care system. States include Wisconsin, Tennessee, Georgia, Washington. Who's at the top of the list? Walmart. Well, the flack from Walmart is going to say something like, well, we're the largest employer, so therefore the numbers, logically, it would follow that we are putting people on the public health care system. Why is that acceptable? Why is being big an excuse for being socially irresponsible?
John, let me ask you something. We've just got a minute left here. How do you see the future? You've looked closely at Walmart. They're heading into cities. That's kind of the final frontier in the United States. Do you think that in 5 or 10 years, basically, all American inner cities will be served by Walmart? Will they sew it up?
I can't predict that for sure, but if you look at the way they're going, yeah, you're going to see more and more of it, especially as we lose more and more manufacturing jobs. You get into these depressing arguments about, you know, some job is better than no job, and who's providing the jobs but Walmart. I'd like to channel Harold Meyerson made a great point in an op-ed in the Washington Post where he said, if Walmart's such a great economic boom, where is all the housing construction for newly employed Walmart workers? You know, Walmart presents itself as we provide good jobs. They say it like a wind-up toy. But, you know, when questioned, and Dan Fogelman just made the point, we're good jobs for students and senior citizens. Why don't they come on the table with that when they're trying to locate in a new city or exurbs?
Well,
we hire students and senior citizens.
Well, there's a question we're going to have to go out on. It's been a very illuminating hour. Reverend Joseph Kiles and Elsie Redman in Chicago, you really helped take us into the texture of this issue, and we're grateful to you both. Reverend Kiles, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Elsie Redman, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Dan Fogelman, corporate spokesman for Walmart out of Bentonville, Arkansas. Mr. Fogelman, thank you for joining us this hour.
Thank you. I'd like to invite your listeners to walmartfacts.com. They can find out the whole truth about Walmart.
I bet you would. And John Dicker, author of the new book, The United States of Walmart. John Dicker, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.